Blessed are you when people hate you, and when they exclude you, revile you, and defame you on account of the Son of Man. Rejoice in that day and leap for joy. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts always be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. You thought you were going to have to make a choice today between staying at home and watching Netflix or coming to church and watching Netflix. So I think we could probably just get the projector turned off here. So, wasn't a choice at all. So. Well, it seems like I have very little to preach about today, because doesn't the gospel just seem just completely self-evident what's supposed to happen here? I mean, what could be more simple? Blessed are all these things, and woe to the opposite of the things. There's four blessings and four woeings, and they're the exact opposite. Blessed are the poor, woe to the rich. Blessed to the hungry, woe to those who aren't hungry. I mean, it's just, it's completely balanced. It's level like the place where Jesus goes out to talk to them. But I just, myself, struggle a little bit with this, and it's not the least of which I've got a bone to pick with Matthew's gospel, who also includes these, but seems to take away the trouble of them. Because there is some trouble in these blessings and woes, isn't there? And for me, and if you haven't thought about it, part of my job is to make you think like there's trouble places so I can solve it later. I'm not going to solve it today, but like there is some trouble with this passage, I think, because who here wants to be told, you know, things are real, I just know stuff stinks for you right now, but you know what, sometime in the future, can't tell you how, it's going to be fine. You're poor right now, but you should be happy you're poor right now, because I can tell you at some later date, you're not going to be poor anymore. I'm not going to give you the mechanism or the strategy. I haven't seen it in my crystal ball. I'm not going to tell you you're going to get that job that you think you want. I mean, at best, when you make promises, or the opposite, which is, you know that person you really dislike because they are oppressing you? They're going to get there. It's going to happen to them. I can't tell you what law is going to be passed or what election is going to be had. But somehow, trust me. And if Jesus said, trust me after these, you would all be like, maybe I shouldn't listen to this. Like, trust, that's like the sign that like something's up here. I mean, at best, we, in our own experience, when we're told that things are going to get better for us, or things are going to get worse for somebody else, I mean, the worst case scenario is that it's a manipulation to keep people content and in their spot. And the best case scenario is it's just cold comfort. But this is Jesus like giving these words to them. And not only Jesus did this, and by the way, back to the little Matthew thing, this is why Matthew might change these a little bit. I mean, the way Matthew's read are a little better. Blessed are the poor in spirit. So, blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. So, not just physical poverty and physical hunger. You got to do something with them, because I'm guessing Matthew is having some of the same struggles I do when I get to this passage. So, there's the problem. That's my problem. And I'm going to tell you kind of the ways that I have tried to deal with my problem with this. And maybe we'll come to some solution. Maybe we won't. Maybe it will inspire you to think of something that many people have not thought of in the 2,000 years of, you know, curating these sayings of Jesus and adoring these sayings of Jesus and putting these on bumper stickers, you know, these sayings of Jesus. Because we love them, even if we're not quite sure. Well, one thing to keep in mind through all of this is that at the core of our Christian faith is a flint-like gaze into the future. This is why all gazes into the past are put down in the Bible, and they have been put down by our tradition. We are a future-oriented folks. We live in the present as though the future has already come. So that is certainly part of it. That's certainly part of what Jesus is doing. So I don't want to ignore that. I don't want to say that like every teaching Jesus gave had to have a solution in the present moment. Because at no point in Jesus' teaching does he ever offer that. It is always future. And that is something for us all to always deal with. But particular to this passage, not just an overarching theme of Jesus' teaching, is that Jesus is teaching them in a way that they expect to be taught. Jesus is giving them these little proverbs, essentially. In fact, the proverbs of blessing and the proverbs of woe are a well-attested teaching mechanism. And that's why it's so easy today to find Old Testament passages that simulate what Jesus did. Our psalm today is, blessed are the ones that do not walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor linger in the way of the scornful. So this is a tradition that Jesus is getting in. He's a teaching tradition of blessing. And we heard a woe and a blessing from Jeremiah. It's really easy for him to tie into this. So the people know that he's speaking in a form, that he is not speaking literally about something. And to understand what they would think when they hear this, you have to understand what's the difference between blessing and what's the difference between woe. Because the tradition he comes out of, the very first word in the very first psalm in the Old Testament is this word ashrei, and as far as we can tell, it's not even a word. It's not a word. We can't, the arguments about how these consonants got put together, no one can untangle. There's lots of people who think they can, but it just ends in arguments. And we translate it, blessed or happy. Ashrei is not a word because it is the exclamation of one being in contentment. Just the same way, woe is not a word. Woe is the sound that one makes when one is in despair. We do this too in English. If you ever go and see King Lear, you will see that there is a line that Lear is to speak, and it is printed on t-shirts. And if you go, if somebody's doing Lear, they might put this word there. It's howl, but it is not a word. It is the noise that Lear's soul makes that he is to represent by those four letters, howl. Ashrei, blessed, happy, content, and woe are kind of partners. They are the sound of your soul when you're in this situation. So he's saying, ashrei, or blessed, happy, content, living in full fulfillment should be the poor because of something that will come. So they recognize what Jesus is doing. He's teaching them just the way their rabbis may have if they'd had the ability to go to their little synagogue school. But Jesus is doing something that they would not have heard from any rabbi, which is, think about the psalm this morning, when he gives the happy are they, or if we went back to Jeremiah and we get the woe, it is because that person is engaging in an activity that they are to perform or to do. So in Psalm 1, happy are they, ashrei, who have not walked in the counsel of the wicked. They have made a choice to not be there. Their contentment, their happiness, this sound that their soul makes of being completely satisfied is because they have made a choice. And in Jeremiah, the woe is because those folks have made a choice to oppress. Jesus' teachings, if you didn't think the other thing about the future, like, you know, cold comfort and all this promise is hard enough, now Jesus has taken a form that they all know, and he's removed the part for them to act on. Because he doesn't say blessed when you become poor. He says blessed when you are poor. Blessed when you are poor. Hungry. Not things that you made a choice to do necessarily. Not things that rely on you. Just something that you currently are. And the woe is the same thing. You all know this. Not everybody who's rich made a decision to be rich. They just ended up being that way. Not everybody who is full made a decision that allowed them to be full. It just happened. And so now these teachings take on this other thing. Jesus is saying, instead of giving them these proverbial examples of the good behavior that brings happiness and the bad behavior that brings woe, he's just saying, you are living in some state, hunger or full, poor or rich, mourning or laughing, somewhere in the future, that's going to be reversed. And if it's going to be reversed to the better, good for you. If it's going to be reversed for the worse, you've got to figure this out. Well, the last thing I want to do with this, I told you I'm not getting to any conclusions today. I'm just giving you the way I want to meditate on this passage, and you know, maybe it will spark a way for you to as well, is that a big difference between the way these teachings appear in Matthew and the way they appear here is that in Matthew's gospel, Jesus ascends onto a mountain, and you are, if you know the story of Moses, you know exactly what's going on here with Jesus. He is getting the word straight from God to deliver to these people. But here in Luke, starts out because Jesus goes to a place, in fact, goes to a place that's flat, that's level. And there's a lot of ink spilled on why this is level or not, but I just, in light of the very first teaching that is given here, I think that this happiness and woe are related to what I consider the leveling power of grace. Because grace, we often think about, in fact, if you grew up, especially if you grew up Lutheran, you probably heard that grace is an acronym for God's riches at Christ's expense. That grace is always about getting something you didn't deserve. You deserve something worse than you're going to get. And that might be true. I'm not Lutheran, so I can't attest to that viewpoint. But, and there are ways that we get so many things that we do not earn at all, but we often do not think about the other side of grace, which is that grace makes up for the deficits that you should have had, for the things you should have had in your life, that you did in fact earn, but you were not given. You can't tell me that everybody gets what they deserve, because they don't. Some people get better, and some people get worse. And what I think Jesus is doing here is spelling out in this proverbial form the leveling power of grace. That sometimes when you get better than you deserve, it will go poorly for you later. But you should not despair if you get worse than you deserve, because grace takes care of that side of the equation as well. And it might not be in the present moment, but it is coming. That is the hope of the kingdom, is that grace works both ways. Not just for those who have done bad, who need to have it wiped out. It is also for those who have done good and maybe exist in a way that they had no control over, they will be blessed. They will be ashrei. In fact, the best translation we would have for this blessing is actually what he says to them after he says that they should be blessed when people revile them and exclude them and hate them, which is, rejoice in that day and leap for joy. That's probably the best translation of that. Rejoice in that day and leap for joy, because if you have not received what you deserve because it has been withheld from you, whether in poverty or hunger, or in reputation, or you have suffered a great loss, you can rejoice and leap for joy, because grace does that too. Amen.